Welcome to another edition of the Voice of Palestine, Voice of the Palestinian People. It's January 19th, 2014, and I'm your co-host, Hanna Qawwas. This week we are talking with Hanna Mermelstein, a school librarian and a Palestine solidarity activist based in Brooklyn, New York. She's an active member of Adala New York, the New York campaign for the boycott of Israel, and she's also led more than 25 delegations to Palestine. We will talk with Hanna about Adala's boycott campaigns, including the boycott against SodaStream and the importance and successes of the BDS movement. Good afternoon to you, Hanna, and welcome to the Voice of Palestine.
Thank you, Hanna.
Could you tell us how did you get involved in the solidarity work, and you know what motivated you to be such an activist?
Sure. When I was in college, I was active on many other issues, and the Second Intifada started toward the end of my days in college, or my last year, and it made me start thinking a little bit about the things that I had learned growing up, just being in the U.S. and exposed to U.S. media, but also being an American Jew. I had a particular Zionist education. So when I started to learn a little bit about what was happening and Israel's brutal actions towards Palestinian people during the Second Intifada, that's what sort of woke me up and made me want to go for myself to see what was happening. Mm-hmm. I had been to Israel before when I, you know, called it Israel and never thought about Palestinians there. Mm-hmm. And the first time I went to actually work with Palestinians was in 2003. And my motivation, as I said, was really to see for myself, and then I thought I would tell some people about it and then move on. But I went and I did solidarity work with a group called the International Women's Peace Service.
Yeah.
And then from there, I felt the responsibility to continue my involvement.
Yeah, actually, we have a woman here from Vancouver, Pat Katagiri, who was with the same group. I don't know if you recall her. She was Pat Katagiri. She was one of the founders of the group. The Women's Service Committee, I believe, was it? Isn't that what
International Women's?
International Women's. Yeah. That was.
So I worked for a while, a couple different stints with that group, and then I was hearing a lot from Palestinian people who I was working with there, mostly farmers. We were in a rural area. We were doing olive harvest support for people who were being attacked by settlers and soldiers while they were trying to harvest their crops. And I was hearing a lot from people, you know, thank you for being here. It's great that you're here, but really, most of your work should be back home. You should go tell people and just spread the word. And one of the ways I thought that would be the most effective to spread the word would be to bring more people there to see what was happening. So this was around 2004, and that's when I first started leading delegations. So that's what brought me into the delegation work, was hearing from Palestinian people that they wanted the word spread more widely than it was being at the time.
It's parallel also to the international solidarity movement, I believe, and you coordinated closely with them. But, you know, it's really, you know, there were many people from BC, Canada, who went there, and most of them were traumatized by what they saw. Did you have the same experience there with the people who went?
It was definitely difficult to go. It was also difficult to know that I could leave at any time and that the people I was working with were not so fortunate. I don't know if you would even want to call it fortunate. Their main struggle in Palestine is actually to stay and not to leave. But, you know, the mobility that I had and the freedom of movement I had within Palestine. I mean, at this point, I have led more than 25 delegations of all different types, and I know a lot of, you know, ways between cities and small villages inside the West Bank and inside 48, ways to get between them. And I know more about, in some ways, about that kind of geography of Palestine than a lot of Palestinians do. And that feels you know, very difficult because obviously it's because of the problem. It's because I have this mobility as an American person, specifically as a Jew, that Palestinians do not have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, they have difficulty just moving 5 minutes away from their town, whether from Jerusalem to Bethlehem or from Bethlehem to Jerusalem, which is, you know, basically just 5-10 minutes drive. So, yeah, I think that's the nature of occupation. So, you know, these 25 delegations were all with the International Women's Service Committee?
No, they were not. It was while I was working with IWPS that I was starting to plan them. But the first delegations I did, I was living in Boston at the time, and so they were with groups of activists from Boston. Mm. I then moved on to found an organization called Birthright Unplugged with a friend.
Yeah.
And so then we did a number of delegations with Birthright Unplugged, which had as part of its purpose to counter the messages of Birthright Israel.
Yeah.
So we did many delegations through that. I've done several through the Health and Human Rights Project, which is a project of American Jews for a Just Peace, and a few with students. And most recently, I did a delegation called Librarians and Archivists to Palestine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that was this past summer, which was nice for me as a librarian to be able to bring together those two worlds.
Actually, we never really talked in details about Birthright Unplugged on our show, but it's really a good counter for the paid, you know, round trip with stay of 2 weeks, I believe, in Israel by the Zionist organizations. Could you tell us a bit about it? I read just something amazing, like 72,000 people went through that, or, you know, I couldn't remember, but it was like a huge number of young people who went with Birthright Israel. Could you tell us a bit about
I think it's over 300,000 who have gone with Birthright Israel. They started in the year 2000, actually just before the Second Intifada began. So they've been doing it for that long. They are free trips for Jewish people between the ages of 18 to 26, all expense, Zionist trips to to Israel. They have all different kinds of themes.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started Birthright Unplugged originally thinking that we might get people who would otherwise go on Birthright Israel, or even who were going on Birthright Israel and then extending their trips and wanting to really learn from Palestinians and to see the West Bank. And our work shifted a little bit over time, but at the beginning it was still mostly Jewish people and mostly people, the same people who Birthright Israel was taking on their trips for the most part, or the people that we would take. It was never exclusive to Jews, because that would be reinforcing the same problem that Birthright Israel has to begin with. But it shifted a little bit over time to be more people who were already active in some way, or at least already wanting to be active and really thinking that they needed a connection to Palestine in order to be active on the issues. But we shifted away from working with people who were going in order to open their minds, but actually working with people whose minds were already open, because we found that while it's an incredible experience for anyone to go, we did not want to have a negative impact on the communities we were visiting by bringing people who were still Zionist into their communities, into refugee camps, for example. But the goal of it was always to counter this idea that Jewish people have a birthright to Palestinian land. And so to do that, we had both the Unplugged trip and we had Replugged, which we took Palestinian kids from refugee camps in the West Bank into 48 for a two-day trip where we saw Jerusalem, the sea, and their own villages that their grandparents are from. And we were able to do that because their children, they don't yet have ID cards, they're under 16, and we're able, as foreigners, to have a certain kind of access that lets us take these kids on these trips.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a great idea. And also it's important really to show people their roots, you know, especially young people. You said it's all around over a quarter of a million people who use the Birthright Israel. That's amazing, you know.
Birthright Israel, yeah. I remember when they reached the 200,000 mark, and then I think that they reached the 300,000
mark,
but I'm not sure.
So it's at least over a quarter of a million, which is amazing, really, mm-hmm. because it shows how much the Zionist, propaganda machine at work, and the resources they have, which we really don't in the Solidarity Movement. And that's why it's important to support this movement. Let's move to Adala, New York, the New York campaign for the boycott of Israel. And there is basic questions, really. It's on your website that says, why Israel and why apartheid and why BDS? I'm sure you're not going to answer all these three questions tonight, but if you can summarize them, they'll be great, yeah?
Sure. So Adala New York started in 2006 as a Palestine solidarity group, mostly in response to the attacks on Lebanon and Gaza at the time. And it was a coalition of individuals and groups at that time. And then it became its own group. And over the course of a few years, as the BDS call, the call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions came out in 2005, and as it started to gain a little bit of traction over the next few years, Adala New York really started doing more BDS work. And there was another New York group called the New York Campaign for the Boycott of Israel that started after the Gaza attacks in 2008, 2009. And those two groups merged into one in 2010. So since then, it's been exclusively BDS work.
Mm-hmm.
So why Israel, why apartheid, why BDS? I think as people, you know, we're in New York, and we're in the U.S., and the U.S. government gives Israel more foreign aid than any other country. So I think we have a responsibility for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
Why BDS? You know, people often say, well, why are you boycotting Israel? There are so many other countries with egregious human rights abuses. Why don't you boycott them?
Mm-hmm.
One answer is, well, we can boycott them. If there is a movement, we would join it.
Mm-hmm.
But the main point here is that Palestinian civil society has overwhelmingly endorsed this call, put out this call, and has asked us mm-hmm. to boycott. So there are different tactics, I think, that work in different situations.
Mm-hmm.
And BDS is a particular one that can work mm-hmm. in this case because Israel is really dependent upon world opinion and trade and all kinds of things. But really, I think the biggest effect of BDS so far has been this issue of world opinion, of Israel trying to promote itself as the only democracy in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And that kind of narrative is losing traction, in part because of the BDS movement. So that's why BDS.
Yeah.
Why apartheid? Well, Israel is an apartheid state. Why do we say that? Because it meets the definition of apartheid under international law. So it's not that it's exactly the same as South Africa.
Mm.
There are similarities and differences to Israel, to South African apartheid, but it does meet the international definition of apartheid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Regarding why not other countries, some. I read an article just recently, last month actually, which said, you know, the other countries they mentioned are already boycotted by, you know, the U.S. and the European countries like Korea and, you know, Iran and all these other countries. But the Israel is not just not boycotted, but is supported and encouraged financially and morally and diplomatically.
And that's an important point, because this is a global civil society movement, and it's specifically because governments have not been able to enforce, not been able or willing in different cases to enforce any kind of justice. And so Palestinians turned, it was exactly a year after the international court decision that the wall was illegal, that is the apartheid wall that Israel's building in the West Bank, was deemed illegal in The Hague, and 1 year later they put out this BDS call saying, look, even the UN has said that nothing has happened, we need to reach out to civil society because the government, we can't wait for the government to do it.
And also not to forget that when the international community want to take action against Israel, the U.S. vetoes them. There is already since 72, there is 43 vetoes just in support of Israel and against the Palestinian human and national rights. So yeah, that's another point that the especially the people in the U.S. Should take in consideration. Apartheid label is sometimes the Zionists get upset and their supporters get upset. We know here in the government of Canada they tried to outlaw even and the use of the word against Israel, and they used to they said it's equating Israel with apartheid is really anti-Semitism, which is again nonsense. But they're trying to cover up the war crimes and the abuses that the Israel commit on a daily basis against the Palestinian people. So this is I think important in our work in general. Do you have activities coming up for the 10th? I know it started in Toronto, the Apartheid Week, Israeli Apartheid Week. Do you have activities around New York and in the U.S. in support of the 10th that's coming up this spring?
We do. We have participated in Israeli Apartheid Week for the past several years, since a couple years after it started, I think, is when it got to New York. Mm-hmm. And we work with a number of groups, actually, around the city for Israeli Apartheid Week. And usually every group will put forward an event and we'll make a calendar. And so there will be many events mm-hmm. throughout the week. We work with Students for Justice in Palestine at a number of different universities and colleges in the city. We work with Queers Against Israeli Apartheid in New York. Mm-hmm. Jewish Voice for Peace, mm-hmm. Jews Say No, Brooklyn for Peace. There are a number of groups that we work with that often sponsor events.
Yeah.
And so this year we'll be having different events. I know Ali Abu Nana has a new book out, and he will be coming to speak. And we're also talking about doing an event that focuses on academic boycott with the recent decision that the ASA, the American Studies Association, decided to support academic boycott. And there's been a whole very interesting backlash to that. That is, I think it's one of the major successes so far in BDS, just judging from the response from Zionist organizations.
Yeah.
So we're hoping to do some education about academic boycott.
And I believe Adala has an online petition in support of the association there, the American.
We do. We have a petition in support of ASA, the resolution, and also we have an action alert to contact our local elected officials. New York elected officials have an interesting habit of getting involved in issues of Palestine, and specifically BDS, trying to shut down discussions of BDS. So we've seen a number of controversies regarding that over the past couple years. Mm-hmm. Last year we had Omar Barghouti and Judith Butler come to speak at Brooklyn College, and a whole bunch of city councilors in New York threatened to withdraw funding from Brooklyn College mm-hmm. because they're hosting this event. Mm-hmm. There were, and now there are elected officials proposing a bill that would withdraw funding from universities or colleges that have ASA chapters because of this resolution. But that hasn't gone through, but people are talking about different proposals that city councilors are thinking about.
Yeah.
And we are countering that as well.
Yeah, there is a word for those, but I don't want to mention it on the air because they really, submit to all the demands that Israel wants, and they really not, the worst part of it is they really not not looking for the interest of their constituents and the American people's interest, basically. So again, you know, this is happening here also in Canada at the same pace, if it's not at larger scale, because Harper now is in. Prime Minister Harper now in Israel, and you know, I'm not watching the TV because it makes you puke, really, watching him in Israel and all the welcoming they are giving him and all the you know, praise they are giving to Harper, who's really a right-wing Christian Zionist, basically. He believes in the, you know what, they want to gather Jews in Palestine, so the Armageddon will come, and if the Jews didn't want to convert to Christianity, then they'll get burned, you know. So good way to gather the Jews, you know, and they call us anti-Semites, you know, this is the essence of anti-Semitism, really. It shows how much the tolerance of the Jewish people, but that's the reality here. So, you know, could we talk a bit about the different campaigns? I noticed you could mention some of them. They are all listed on your website, but if you can tell us briefly.
So the first major campaign, and one that we've seen a lot of success from, was against a land developer in New York, who's also a settlement builder, who's also a diamond manufacturer. His name is Lev Levayev. And we started working on that campaign more than 6 years ago now, I think. And when he opened a store, we were already looking into him. And this is important. It was primarily because people in Palestine had asked us to. So one of our important criteria for any campaign is that it has a link directly to Palestine and to Palestinians who we know. So people in Jayus and Bilayim, two different villages that had been demonstrating against the wall, they contacted us and said, look, this guy is building the settlements on our land. Can you look into him? Mm-hmm. And it's Lev Levayev, and he was opening a diamond store on Madison Ave right in New York. So we were there, and I was not actually in New York yet, so I was not there, but we as a group were there at his opening, and Susan Sarandon was there and crossed a picket line of us in order to get into the store, and that made news. So right away, we got some press from the campaign, and since then, we've been targeting Levayev. We do creative actions outside his store. We still do annual Christmas caroling, and sometimes we're there also for Valentine's Day and for Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. So we do skits and songs, costumes, signs, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But we also do a lot of work behind the scenes, both with different divestment movements. So we have been in touch with people in European countries, for example, whose banks are thinking of divesting from Levayev's companies, his main company being Africa Israel. In London, they were going to, rent an embassy from him in Tel Aviv from one of his companies. That stopped. Africa Israel, after a few years of working on this campaign, announced that they would no longer be building settlements. And it turns out that that's not necessarily true, but they are definitely feeling the pressure around it. We also, and this is something that relates to the current SodaStream campaign that I know you wanted to talk about as well, that we worked a lot on the celebrity connection. So Levayev had all these celebrities on his website wearing his jewelry, and we started contacting the celebrities one by one to say, look, is this really somebody who you want to support this way? And celebrities started disappearing from the website. And finally, the celebrity section was gone altogether. So there are no celebrities. There are models supporting his jewelry, but there are not celebrities anymore on his website. So we also worked with, we talked to both Oxfam and UNICEF, who both, Levayev claimed that he was giving money to both, and he was using that to say, look, I'm this great philanthropist. And we heard back from them. I actually don't remember which one said which thing, but one of them said, we have never gotten any money from him, and we won't. And the other one said, we did receive money from him, but we won't take it anymore.
Good.
So we've had a number of successes on that front.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Another of our campaigns is the TIA Crest campaign. So TIA Crest is a huge pension fund, and there's a national and really international campaign, but mostly a national campaign. Jewish Voice for Peace is working a lot on it. The U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation is working on it. And Adela New York was part of this national group and was also working locally because their headquarters are here. And the campaign around TIA Crest is to try to get them to divest from companies profiting from Israeli occupation, including Caterpillar, Motorola, Elbit Systems, SodaStream, Veolia, a number of corporations. So we've worked on that campaign. And the third main part, component of our campaign work in the past couple of years has been around cultural boycott, because New York is really a cultural hub, and a lot of Israeli artists and groups that come, that do international tours, come to New York. So Bat Sheva Dance Company, for example, they come yearly, usually, and we're always there outside protesting because of their institutional connections. They're, you know, they call themselves an ambassador for Israel. And that is really what the cultural boycott is targeting, this sort of whitewashing that cultural work does to, you know, to ignore Israeli human rights abuses and even to be complicit in a lot of ways. So we're always protesting against these groups that come to town and also try to work on U.S. artists who have been invited to go there and try to get them not to go to Israel under the official, you know, Israeli government tours.
Most recently, the boycott against SodaStream. Could you tell us a bit about it and the significant? And, you know, also recently was revealed that they are losing really quite a bit, up to 40% of their stock went down. But you know more than me about all these details. Could you tell us a bit about them?
So SodaStream, we, in Avila, New York, we have only recently started working on the SodaStream campaign. It's funny because we had talked about it a couple years ago, and we said, nobody has SodaStream. This campaign is not going to be relevant to enough people, and we did not start working on it yet. And then suddenly everybody has SodaStream. So they are a company that has been expanding very rapidly. But, yeah, at the end of last year, their last quarter results showed that their stocks were majorly declining. And I think that's at least in part because of the international campaign that's happening now. So SodaStream is manufactured in Mitzor Adumim, which is the industrial area of the Ma'ale Adumim settlement, which is smack in the middle of the West Bank, divides the northern and southern West Bank from each other, right in the middle of the E1 zone of between Jerusalem and Jericho. So,
and it's built
very strategic look.
It's built on stolen Palestinian land, really.
So it's built on stolen Palestinian land. It's using Palestinian resources. And, you know, in a place where settlers use and Israelis use many times the amount of water that Palestinians use. So Palestinians don't even have access to water, and here they're making these SodaStream products. And I think one of the particular things about the SodaStream campaign is that SodaStream itself claims to be a green product, a guilt-free product. That's what they always say. Because you don't have to throw away all these bottles when you're making seltzer, you can make your own seltzer. But so they're claiming to have this socially conscious part of the company, and yet they're manufacturing it on stolen Palestinian land using exploited labor. So
Not to mind the shipping cost from Israel halfway around the world, and the pollution they create by shipping it halfway or
It would be interesting to look. It would be interesting to actually look at the environmental impact of SodaStream and to see if it actually is greener at all, because there's also all the refills that you have to get, and all there are a lot of products that go with the SodaStream that are also made of plastic, so it would be interesting to look at. But you know, primarily it's that they're using this stolen land.
It's marketing, basically, marketing with no conscience.
And recently they just announced about a week ago that Scarlett Johansson is the new spokesperson for SodaStream. She'll be the voice on the Super Bowl commercial, et cetera. And so, again, we have this celebrity connection, and a number of groups are and individuals are starting to contact her and also Oxfam, because she's an Oxfam spokesperson, and really Oxfam should not be associated with SodaStream.
Yeah.
So this is one angle for that campaign as well.
And I think they're hiring her because they're feeling the pinch of the boycott, most probably. Don't you think so?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
They need a celebrity to boost their image, and I think it looks like it might backfire.
Yeah, it might. Yeah, because they're hoping to reverse the trend, the downward trend.
Yeah.
So hopefully this will. You know, it's not just in the U.S. Actually, here there is a coalition in Canada that's emphasizing on SodaStream and on the stores that are carrying it, and certainly we're having a success here in Canada also, it's a coalition and of groups all across Canada, the same like in the U.S. there is many groups are working on this, which is important to emphasize.
We have
it's important to emphasize on a certain target, which will make our work more effective, don't you think?
Sure, definitely. And we had our first New York-based SodaStream action around the holidays. There was a national day of action, and we participated with Idella New York, Jewish Voice for Peace New York, and the Park Slope Food Co-op members for BDS. Mm. We organized a demonstration outside of Target. In Brooklyn, and we we had signs and we sang holiday carols that were rewritten to have lyrics about SodaStream, and we got virtually no negative reaction.
People
were interested. They would stop, see what we're doing, and then say, "Oh, I didn't know that about SodaStream." One person even said, "Oh, I was actually planning to buy a SodaStream. Now I won't."
Mm-hmm.
Several people said, "I have family members who have it, or I have friends who have it. I'll tell them about it." So it is, it's a product that people are really starting to hear about now. Mm-hmm. And as people hear about the boycott, I think they will not buy the product.
Yeah, actually, Target is entering the market here in Canada just recently, the last couple of months, and we made sure to check, and they're not carrying it, so which is a good sign. You know, they don't want
to
start controversy here in Canada, which is good. So, I'd like to go back to the basis of unity of Adala. I noticed it's the same 3 points that the civil society that issued the boycott call. Could you tell us a bit about them and why it's significant to have unified message and demands? Because we're not boycotting Israel because Israel, we're singling out Israel. We are boycotting Israel as long as it doesn't meet certain human rights demands. Could you tell us about those, please?
Exactly. So when Palestinian civil society issued the BDS call, it was not indefinite, as you said. It's until Israel satisfies international law and basic human rights by doing 3 things. So one is ending the occupation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really talking about 1967,
mm-hmm.
West Bank, Gaza, Golan Heights, East Jerusalem. The second is equal rights for Palestinian citizens of Israel. And the third is the right of return for Palestinian refugees.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason that this was so significant is that it really encompasses all groups of Palestinian people that Israel has worked very hard to divide from each other. And there have rarely, especially recently, been movements that cross those borders and those categories. You know, there are geographical borders, you have different color IDs, you have different rights for different people.
Mm-hmm.
So there. So it's very significant that the call came from representatives from all three of those groups, and that it really targets mm-hmm. the end of discrimination against Palestinian people, all Palestinian people.
Yes.
And so that those are the demands. And Adele in New York just adopted the same demands because primarily we want to support justice in Palestine, and we think that that comes from supporting self-determination mm-hmm. for Palestinian people. So this is what people are asking for, and mm-hmm. it's something that is easy for us to respond yeah. to and to support.
Yeah. It's worth noting also number two you mentioned is equality inside Israel. The Palestinian people who are Israeli citizens, whether they are Christian or Muslim, they are 20% of the population. So it's not an insignificant number. And we're also noting that there is a similar name like Adela New York that exists in Israel. It's called Adala, and it lists 50 laws that discriminate against Jews and non-Jews inside Israel, and 29 pending laws that they are discussing on this 19th session of the Knesset. So it's clearly, if people want to know about discrimination and apartheid, they should go to the Adala website.
And just to clarify that it's not the same group. Adala just means justice in Arabic. Yeah. So we chose the name Adala New York, but we have often been confused with yeah. Adala in Haifa, and yeah. they do great work, but we're not the same one.
Yeah, no, I know, but it's, you know, I mention it for people if they want to learn about the laws that discriminate, and this is part of the BDS work, you know, equality
yeah.
for all citizens, Israeli citizens, whether they are Jews or non-Jews. Okay, so, you know, the BDS in general is having an effect. And I heard recently, I'm not sure if you're aware of it, that Netanyahu and Barak are coming to New York to counter the BDS effects. Do you have any information about that?
I don't, actually. I know that they have done a lot to try to counter it, including putting a lot of money into propaganda efforts. But I haven't heard specifically of them coming to New York to do that. But I guess that's something we should look into.
Yeah, I think so, because I hear that. And even Barak is coming here, I'd say around April, I believe, after he visits New York, he's coming here to Vancouver, Surrey, actually, in Canada. So, yeah, it's worth looking into it. Maybe you could have a nice reception for him with dinner and everything.
Sounds like fun.
So, you know, I just want to give you last word. I know you work on the BDS, but could you tell us how people can support the struggle of the Palestinian people for liberation and human rights?
Well, I think first, bdsmovement.net is, you can go there to read the BDS call, mm-hmm. and then look up a group in your area. There are, in most major cities, do have groups working on BDS in some way or another, or have Palestine solidarity groups. A lot of universities and colleges have them as well. Mm-hmm. Look it up, and if it doesn't exist, start something.
Yeah.
People in Palestine are very willing to consult on certain campaigns. If you have questions about those, if you're in the U.S., there's the U.S. campaign to end Israeli occupation that coordinates among a number of groups. In Canada, I don't know what would be a national group that is the best one to get in touch with if you're interested in starting a campaign, but maybe you can say that.
Yeah, there is really different groups, including Independent Jewish Voices, which has groups all across Canada, but there is solidarity groups all across Canada, from Montreal to Victoria, all across the country, so people could reach there. Also, you should tell us about your website. Is it adalany.org? So people get
exactly adalany.org, and we have information about all the campaigns that we work on, mm-hmm. as well as some good resources. Actually, we have A lot of our flyers are done in comic form by one of our members, so we have some attractive flyers that people on the street tend to take more than just, you know, a bunch of words.
Yeah.
So you can feel free to use and change those for your own purposes.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much, Hannah, for talking with us. And it's really was a pleasure talking to you. And keep up the good work.
Thank you. You too.
Yeah, thanks.
And that was Hannah Kawas talking with Hannah Mermelstein, a Palestinian solidarity activist from Brooklyn, New York. And with that, we conclude another edition of The Voice of Palestine. I've been your co-host, Marian Kawas, and our final piece of music is by Jewish-American folk singer David Rovics, entitled I Wanna Go Home. We dedicate this beautiful song to all the Palestinians in diaspora who have steadfastly refused to relinquish their right and their passion to return home.
I was born a refugee, and I don't know if I'll ever see the old farmhouse I've heard about, but it's where I belong, there is no doubt, 'cause my whole family is from that farm. We never did nobody harm, and if you're confused by what you heard, let me boil it down to a single word. I wanna go home. I wanna go home. I have heard my grandpa say that on the street, most every day, the neighbor's kids would kick a ball with my dad. When he was small, we were Christians, they were Jews, but it was no big deal. Religious views, so it was strange when at the point of a gun across the river we had to run. I wanna go home. Searching for some kind of sign, for some way back.